This is Uncle's UFO.
Had like a good demo. Times in that boat,
when
I'll tell you.
This name up. A lot of the boys call me Uncle because I am to a lot of kids. Rolf Brothers boy said, why don't you call it Uncle's UFO? It's either unidentified floating object or unidentified flying object. Yeah, I won the races about 12 years with it.
He sails out on the open seas in hopes to feed his family. The days alone, fish I caught. In raging storms he has fought.
You're listening to 89.9 WERU-FM. My name is Tressa Versteg. This half hour, you are in for a treat. Unforgettable sea stories from Rose and Andrew Uncle Gove, lifelong residents of Stonington, who also lived on Eagle Island. Last year, after 80 years of hauling, Andrew Uncle Gove retired from lobstering and sold his boat, Uncle's UFO. This summer, he did haul traps with friends, but mainly focused on writing a book about his many decades on the water. I was lucky to interview the Goves around their kitchen table with a panoramic view of the Deer Isle thoroughfare and Islaho. Get ready to be transported to the wonderful world of the Goves. You'll probably never want to leave.
And here's the life of a fisherman. Only he can understand a windburned face and calloused hands. He rarely sets his feet on land.
They call me the old man of the sea. Because I'm about the oldest one still hanging on here. That's what they call me, but my name was Andrew. I tell everybody the middle initial was U. It was so useless, but it's really Alma, U-L-M-E-R.
My name is Rose Annette Gove. I was born June the 9th, 1929, on my birthday. For 5 years, there's been a seal come here. And that rock, you can just see that ledge just showing just next to where the boats are moored. He's been there and come in on that ledge during the day, morning sometime, on my birthday for 5 years. I think he's after herring, for one thing. But he's still there on my birthday. That's all I need to know. Now I'm waiting. Next June will be 6 years. And he's got to be out there.
Were you born in Stonington?
Oh, yes. Right across the bay here, right across tide or ocean or whatever you want to say. My mother had, my mother had 9 children. And we were poor. We were a poor family, but we always had...
Everybody was poor them days.
Always had plenty to eat, seafood and stuff like that. My mother was a wonderful cook. No, those are the best days of my life, I think, growing up when I did and meeting my man here and everything. And, you know, we didn't need too much to make us happy, new cars and all this stuff. We just, I just remember it was the most wonderful time. I'm glad I grew up those days.
And did you grow up in Stonington as well then?
Well, I was born here. And then they took me to Eagle Island when I was 2 weeks old. My grandmother and grandfather got me what happened because my mother was expecting another one. They didn't have enough to feed me.
Yeah.
And my parents lived there too for a while afterwards. Mm. But I know they sent me up the island. See, there's no cars, no vehicles, nothing. No radios, no communication. A lot of times it was so rough out there we couldn't get off the island. Mm-hmm. We were more or less stranded.
Did there used to be a school on Eagle Island?
Yes, there was. I'll tell you what, me and this oldest boy that was on Eagle Island, his father told us he'd give us a cent and a half apiece for mice if we caught them.
Oh.
So then you could buy 3, 4, 5, 6 mouse traps at nickel or something. Well, we got catching mice and we was catching them pretty fast. And what we would do, this is a one-room schoolhouse. There's a stone wall down back and one out front. And a lot of mice in them stone walls. But we'd check them traps off before we went in at recess time and in the morning when they got that, we'd check them all. Then at recess time, one or the other of us would raise our hand to go out. we went out and reset our traps. We didn't have to go to the bathroom. And then at noontime, the other one, would, we both would do it. But then the next time, maybe in the afternoon, he'd raise his hand to go. Well, one morning I come to school, and I went in, and old Miss White, she said, "Your mousetrap," she said, "it's all on the stove." I went over and looked in that stove. It was on that 4 foot wood stove that they had in that old schoolhouse then. All there was a red hot iron that was on the spring spout. I really thought she was a good teacher, but she'd spoil my business, put me out of business. It was in the early 40s.
Yeah.
And they closed that, so I'd come over here in the winter and board. I lived alone part of the time.
How old were you?
About 13, 14.
Oh, my gosh.
I got a room in one old motel that was over here up to Sylvester's Cove and fixed up one room in that, and they let me have it to stay in. And then I boarded with Mrs. Barber down on the Dow Road a couple of years, and her husband was out to sea somewhere too. I went into the freshman year of high school up here, to Deer Ride, and then I decided I wanted to be down here closer. And I came down here and I went to school for about 3-4 months, I guess, in the sophomore year. And I went getting nowhere. I had to get some money because the families were so poor. So I quit, went fishing. And the stuff I learned up there weren't doing me a bit of good. So I come back, or I went fishing here, went to the father for a while. Then I got a boat of my own and just kept going.
Did you guys go to school together growing up?
Did we go to school, you say?
Yeah, together. Is that where you first met?
A little bit on the last end of it.
I really like going to school. My sister and I both get up before my mother and father get up and got our breakfast and everything and walked to school. And it was really cold. But I always liked school very much. And I always did very well, pretty good. And no D's anyway. And there was a bunch of us that used to play guitars and sing, and then there was a couple of guys and two of my sisters and I and my cousin, and we used to go around playing in Isle of Hull or Sedgwick or up here to Stonington. But one time I get up here at the Opera House, come out and do my song, and I knew it very well, and I forgot it. And instead of me just standing there and hoping it would come, I said, "I'm sorry, I forgot the song." And I turned around and walked off the stage. I was so embarrassed, honest to God. But there's one time I do remember. My cousin and I used to sing a lot. The doctor over here, he used to live in that big tub building halfway over town, mm-hmm. and they had to build it over. My cousin and I come sing on his birthday. I got through that one, all right.
She could play a guitar and was a real good singer.
Oh, I used to play the guitar and harmonica together.
You give her a flute now or something, she'll play it. She'll play with it.
Yeah, I used to play piano accordion a little bit.
How old were you guys when you met?
Well, I'd met before, but the first time I dated her, I was fishing with her father. It was on her 16th birthday.
17.
Yeah. I had a little 14-foot rowboat.
Where did you take Rose?
Yeah, you want me? Gary, I ain't supposed to tell you all this. No, I'm just kidding.
What was that, huh?
Then on her first date, she said, "Where do you take Rose?" We went down back to Crotch Island.
We went to the movies, and then there was another couple, and Andrew and I had his rowboat. And we rode out here to Crotch Island. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been out there before.
So how old were you when you got married?
We waited till she turned 18. We'd been going together pretty near 2 years in, but I was only 17. If she waited till she was 18, she didn't have to get permission from her parents. A lot of people said we'd never make it.
But and so now you've been married.
72 years. I like to set records that way. I got thinking here the other day. Oh, two or three girls looked me over. I know I was. But when she came along, it looked just right. So I took her.
I'm 11 months old in Nando, and I tell everybody that I robbed the cradle, but he did the chasing.
Get blamed for everything. Yeah. This was the best thing I ever done.
What'd you say, hon?
I said, you was the best thing that I ever done, didn't you?
Well, that goes double. That goes double.
I see her shadow, eclipse of the moon. When I look in your eyes, the shadow moves. Here I am falling for you. Do you feel? Do you dream the way I do?
You're listening to WERU Community Radio, 89.9 FM. My name is Tressa Versteeg. You're listening to amazing stories from Rose and Andrew Uncle Gove. We just heard them reminiscing about being together for over 70 years. Now we'll hear a little bit more about working on the water.
You grew up with lobstering in your family?
Oh, yes. My father lobstered for quite a long time. He did work on the quarry for a while, but before he did that, he lobstered quite a bit. And then when Andrew started going with him, I guess he kept right on lobstering after that.
Did you ever go out on the water with your dad or with Andrew?
I used to get seasick, I'm sorry to say. I know I went out with my uncle one time, my father's brother, all day long. I thanked him for a good time, and I was so seasick, I couldn't even sleep all night.
I had my first traps when I was 6 years old, but when I was 7 years old, I had a license. The traps I had, we had wooden ones then. I only built them this long. We used to take 4 foot ladders and saw them two, use the 2 foot ladders and two bowls. We had to haul them all this way by hand. Back when I started, I had an old compass that had never been adjusted. And you more or less had to guess where you went in the fog. You had no sounding machines to see how deep the water was. And I tell you, that's hard racket. Now you listen to this one. If the wind blew in a certain direction, you got the waves going this way. And if you was over here and you wanted to get down here, if you set a little crossways to them, on that quarter on them, where it would aim you at them, and we just watch the way we was hitting them seas. Or it, sometimes the wind would die out, and it was flat calm. We'd watch the wake off the stern of the boat, start it turning, we'd straighten it up. Then there was times that we didn't do either one right, and we missed. That's back them days. Now, you've got chart plotters, radars, there's a picture of everything around you, and you can just speak it to the other one and tell you just how much water there is every minute. It keeps coming right up and down, you know.
Were there any times where you weren't sure if you were going to make it back?
You know, I don't rile very easy. When something happens like that, I don't get riled up about it. I don't get scared, or say. I just fight it, and it's worked so far. But everybody tells me that I was like a cat, had nine lives, and I tell them eight of them are gone. I'll be careful.
Oh, wow. 8 of them are gone.
Yep, I've had accidents. I tell them the only one that don't have any is somebody that don't do nothing. Anybody can run a boat now. Of course, there's a lot of other things to learn, but you can start a half an hour before sunrise or a half halt or half an hour after sunset. But these are fellas that's just fishing right close to home. They usually leave just before sunrise, so they are out when it's, you can see them good and what you're doing. They usually, most of them will come in 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, haul 250 traps. This would be an average hauler. Mm-hmm. Some of them young fellas would haul 500-600 with some of this fast rig they got. And then a lot of the older fellas would shake their head. I'm one of them. Yeah, we haul what we can. If we got the 800 out, we haul what we can of them that day. The next day, we'd go out and haul some more of them. Usually it takes us about 3 days to go through 800. Then we come back and start on the other end. Every town more or less fishes their own dooryard, is what I'd call it. And they would go offshore as far as they wanted to. Like when I went offshore, the fathers took me 7 hours to get there. So I might start the night before to go. Because I wouldn't get that till daylight the next morning. And I went off there over 100 miles. But a couple of the years that I done it, I'd stay a couple of 3 days. But I didn't like being gone from my cook here, you know. So I started staying. My girls and this one here can eat more lobsters than anybody you know of.
Oh, yeah?
You're talking about me.
Yeah.
You think I'd talk about you? I said I couldn't catch lobsters enough to keep you going if I didn't keep my trap.
Oh, I love my lobster sandwich. I can't eat the tails. They're too tough. Of course, I've had these teeth now, 90 years old. But they give me their knuckles and the claws, and I make what we call a knuckle sandwich. Not this kind here, but this one has lobster meat. I just cut it up a little fine and put mayo in it. Oh, boy. I just love it.
Does sound pretty good.
Yeah, lobster chowder.
Yeah, she makes lobster chowder.
And lobster crepes. My daughter makes lobster crepes. Crepes. Lobster crepes. They are good, too.
Yeah, real good.
But I like my lobster sandwich, my knuckle sandwich, the best.
If you got good lobster fishing in this area here, 1 or 2 years and everybody makes a rush at it, the next year where you didn't get any, they might be over here. I'm saying if I was a lobster, and I've tried to figure it that way a lot of times, and what they seem to do is there's little spots that they can hide good, and when they shed and are soft, they're pretty vulnerable to everything. So they want to hide till they harden up a little so their claws can bite good and whatnot. And when they do that, they're mating. They mate when they shed while they're soft. And you wouldn't go where there wasn't any lobsters if you was out mating, would you? So that's why I say these lobsters come in and find these bunches of lobsters and they'll stay there and shed and it'll be good fishing. I see why they do it, but then you've got the other problem is you don't know where they're going to do this. They'll find new place this year and next year maybe somewhere else. Just keep trying this and that and the other tip. And there's more lobsters than there's ever been.
Why is there more lobsters, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I've told everybody else. I tell them the longer I go, the less I know. So you don't listen to me. You may not know this, but I flew a plane for 20 years too. Flew it right out of here. When I was sailing, here in sailing, there were some people that ahead of me bought these little small seaplanes. And they could catch herring way ahead of anybody else. Because when up in the air, you see this black bunch and it moves and it changes shapes and sizes. And after you get to learn it, you know pretty near what size they are and how many there is. And you can tell somebody with a radio where to run that twine. I saved a lot of stuff when I had that plane. They'd lose a boat out of here, hunt for 3 days, one particular case I remember. I hired a fellow that flew a plane over here. He was flying a bigger plane, 1,500 feet up and going 150 miles an hour, and I slowed mine down about 80 miles an hour at 500 feet. In 15 minutes, I found it. Another thing, I know the way the wind was and how the tides run, and there was one boat sunk right down in here. It had 5 people on it. They'd been up here at the movies. I found the boat with one of them tied to it and the 2 survivors.
Have you ever hesitated to go help somebody because you didn't know if you'd come out?
No, I took a chance. Any time that somebody was gone, I'd go. They used to call me first. They don't know more because they know I'm pretty well had it. I'd be more on the feet and I would be good. You start to think it's all I've done all my life. And the one thing I tried to do was outsmart that lost stuff. End the whole of it and end the hearing and stuff.
Do you feel like you've been able to outsmart the lobster?
No, they outsmarted me. They're still doing it. And that's why I say the longer you go, the less you know.
Among all the hard work, blowing gusts, and endless days at sea, Rose and Andrew have many memorable moments. These last few are some of my favorites.
We was outside of Seal Island, weren't we? Or we'd in there somewhere. While we were fishing for codfish and whatever, I saw all these whales coming. There must have been four of them or five. They were probably from here over town away from us. And then suddenly I looked, and there were two headed for us, where the boat was, coming closer. So I told Andrew, I said, "Hon," I said, "you better pull up the anchor, because those whales are headed straight for us." He said, "Why?" He said, "I got here first." Well, anyway, just before he got too close, he went under, and then he came up again. And when he came up, he was... must have been from here to the house next door or something when he came over and went underneath the boat. Where I was, I could have touched it when it went under our boat. And I was so afraid but so happy at the same time. And everybody was shook up. And my other friends started beating their boat floor so they would...
He said, "I thought if he was blind, he might not be deaf." Just he blowed off there. She didn't mention that, but he, you know, they blowed.
I had my hand on his side, and but I didn't touch him, but I could have.
Probably
I thought I better not.
That hose from us, he blowed, and it's really? Just like a thunder shower, you know.
It was exciting. I was thrilled because I love whales. But the same day, I caught a 30-pound codfish, too, so that was my best day.
I don't know if I ought to show you this one or not, but they was musicians, and they wanted to get over to North Haven to play a tune. I could take them over that in 30 minutes. We all got ready, and away we went. And they was the mothers and fathers there, to two or three of the other girls that was on there. And it was a little breeze northwest, and I was headed over across into wind. And I had to break wind. I thought, what am I going to do? And I kept thinking, if I hang on till I get over there and I start up that ladder, it's going to be worse. So wind was blowing through the window. We were cruising about 20 knots. I thought, well, I don't believe they'll even notice. Well, one of these boys, he come up through the door. And have you been around where the Clam Flats was on the low tide? Well, he pokes his head up through. He said, "Must be low tide." He said, "I smell Clam Flats." Well, I said, "Yep." I said, "It is low tide." I knew it went Clam Flats. I didn't lie to him. I did tell the truth. It was low tide. I agreed with him that much. He went back aft. He stayed there a while and took his head in there again. He said, "That ain't Clam Flats." He said, "It's storage." Well, I'm all ready to bust, and I don't want to say nothing to all these kids and stuff around. So I said, "Might be that bait I got down on the stern." He said, "Nope." He said, "Storage." So I never said a thing. We got home. I told her all I was about busting tail somebody. Well, they had taken a picture of me staring across the bay. So they made one out and sent this to me. And they put this writing on it. It says, "Up here, mercy sakes." He said, "Look, tell Rose, put less onions in that chowder." Oh, he said, "And it will die, but I smell Clam Flats." And then they put these streamers on it.
The man who smelt it is Bob Warner, a longtime friend of the Goves, even after he experienced Andrew breaking wind.
So I'm seeing this radio in the corner.
He talks to his men on the main fisherman's radio, marine radio. So,
would you ever talk to him on it?
I called him one night. He was down to races. I think it was down either Jonesport or went to harbor, and I was getting worried because, you know, a long time before he got home. And I hollered and asked him, I said, are you on your way home? I said, I've been worried. And what was it you told me?
Oh, he said, I might have got me a new girlfriend or something.
I told you I wouldn't trade you for 220. Anyway. we've been fun with it. He's been wonderful. We've had a wonderful home and two wonderful girls. And what else can you ask for? Maybe four wonderful dogs.
We haven't had any fights. We disagree
Aggie once
in a while.
When I see I'm moving, I say, okay.
Oh, I wanted to show you something. See, our 70th anniversary, a friend gave us these cups. Mr. Wright and Mrs. Always Wright. I use them once in a while, but Andrew don't like this one. But no, I got to admit, he's right most of the time. But once in a while, I'm right. And when I do, I go cock-a-doodle-doo.
The sun is setting in the western sky. He thinks of our trips gone by. When he sees the Milky Way, it's time to head back up the bay. At home the fire warms the cold.
You just heard from Rose and Andrew Uncle Gove. I am so grateful to the Goves for opening their home and lives to me. Andrew is writing a book that will include some of these moments and many, many more. You don't want to miss it. A super special thanks to their daughter, Sandy Richter, for connecting us and also for providing the music for this show. You heard parts of her songs Fisherman's Song, Eclipse of the Moon, and Where Love Lies from her band Tersey on their album called Eclipse of the Moon. My name is Tressa Versteeg, and thanks for listening to WERU 89.9 FM.
Here's the life of a fisherman. Only he can understand a windburned face and calloused hands. He rarely sets his feet on land. And here's the life of a fisherman.